This church may have a lot of doors, 10 of them, outside doors to be exact, but you had to get to one of them to get in here. And that walk from the car or the dorm or your house at Farrington Grove was probably pretty quiet. Or maybe you plug in your earbuds like I do and listen to music or a podcast on your way to church. I often listen to On Being with Krista Tippett on Sunday mornings, and that's a lot like going to church, whether she's talking to one of the first undersea explorers, who they call her deepness, or practicing doubt with Adam Gopnik. I'm going to church when I'm going to church. And as we explored silence last week and our deep need to listen and to get bored, we ought to recognize how intertwined these two things are. Now, my sincere apologies to all the educators in the room, but many of us, I'm not speaking about myself necessarily, but many of us who had a propensity to fall asleep in class, maybe once or twice, actually are listening, whether you know it or not, and we're learning from you. And I have to remind myself that a lot now, that this is the tangle involved in teaching and learning. That teachers aren't transmitting facts onto a blank page, right? They are collaborating with their students to create a kind of art together. Art that is the complex firing of neurons in the brain which embed memories, spatial reasoning, analogies, and phrases that we can recall years later. It's a co-creative exercise, teaching and learning. It's not a mechanistic programming of a computer or even a sophisticated processing of artificial intelligence, which still requires the implementation on a mechanical system of a particular process and the use of a massive storage unit, right? Even if that is the quasi-living internet. Learning is not brute force memorization or the storing of information on a hard drive. It is co-creation. It's making art. The teacher isn't the artist and the student the canvas. We're all art created to make art. When we walk into church, are we prepared to make art? As the art God has created and the artists God empowers, are we prepared to make art in the world when we go out in bold new ways? Ways which surprise and excite God. Ways which inspire the art of others. I mean, this is what we do in liturgy, right? The work of the people. It's made by us all, right? Every voice, every stand and kneel and sit, those Episcopal pew aerobics, right? Every note sung and prayer lifted, we make art together each week. And in the midst of our art making, we listen to stories from Scripture, different stories from different genres, right? This morning, we read from the Torah, the law, which is also not just a sequence of laws, but the story of God's relationship with a special people. We sang an ancient song from a collection of praises and laments. We read a letter from a church leader, and then the gospel, the good news. Four beautiful, different, and difficult stories. Stories for us to hear and explore. These are the materials from which we can make an art. So where do we start? If we're making art, what are we actually going to make with these different stories? Our reading from Exodus is the revealing of the Ten Commandments to Moses. So, of course, there's a lot of stuff there, right? We could go in a million different directions and talk for hours about it. And we see plenty of evidence of creative use of these rules in our world, right? And I don't just mean cross-stitching them and putting them on our walls, right? Or the creative placement of monuments on public grounds, right? That's not so creative. But how does God invite us into teaching, into this teaching, to see this art that we're called to make in the midst of it, right? For instance, I was struck this week by that fifth one, honor your father and your mother so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Remember, these are written in the second person, so all of these are about you. About you. When I read it, I'm hearing God speaking to me, right? Not to my children about me. God's speaking to me. It's about me respecting my parents. And about how many rules I've made for my children, encouraging them to hear that as being about them, right? And how often are they really about me, respecting me? About my wanting to be respected by them, or force them to respect other people above them. Doesn't sound very much like it is speaking to me. Doesn't this idea reveal something about God too? How God never forces us to respect God, but instead we're given the tools to learn how to love and respect God? How often do we hear people attack our children for their behavior rather than to hear God's words are to us? It's not them, us, always the us. We're called to treat our parents well. The words are directly to us, to all of the us. Treat our parents well, not condemn them for not treating their parents well. When I hear the Ten Commandments or read them in my devotions, I find myself always going back to Jesus. And that's okay to do, by the way. I know even good Episcopalians may have a hard time hearing this, but you can read Torah with both a historical lens and a Jesus lens. It is okay. You're not hurting anyone. And I go to all these times that the scribes and elders complain about Jesus breaking Torah. This happens in every gospel. One of the few things, if you think about it, that happens in all four gospels, and this is one of them, that he breaks Sabbath law. Here, that's number four. But each time Jesus reminds them that they are breaking the law to keep it. They aren't keeping the spirit of the Sabbath when they let others suffer on the Sabbath. Jesus isn't giving us permission to break rules only in an abstract sense, right? Or telling us to disregard the stuff we think is bad. He's inviting us to look at these commandments with new eyes. Eyes of love and compassion. What does this mean? What does this mean? The same spirit is behind the gospel story from John from today, right? Love and compassion for each other are more important than these human laws written to protect God. God doesn't need our protection. We don't need to be God's apologists. We don't need civil laws which privilege our beliefs, because any belief which leaves someone out is not from God. Any law which seeks to punish more than it does to include the outcast isn't from God. Any attempt to exploit or physically divide us by social or economic class, right? Read that gospel again, so that the poor lose access to God, has to be torn down. And just because we don't do animal sacrifices doesn't mean we don't do this in our own ways now. So we read these stories. We could keep going. We could read these stories. And we respond to these stories so we can create beauty in acts of love and devotion. It comes from that. We are inspired by this toward love and devotion. We're trying to make the way for the Jubilee Kingdom with its upside-down economy and its just sense of inclusion. This is what Jesus keeps talking about. These stories should encourage us to be like the Pharisees, creating new laws for other people to follow. Always for them. Don't have to worry about us. But they guide us to embody the creative character of Christ. The one who finds wisdom in fools and hope in the outcast. He brings in the one who falls through the cracks and encourages faith in the one beaten down by her environment. We share these stories to learn so that we can do this very work too. Right? All of us in our various gifts, storytellers, teachers, bakers, stewards, administrators, teachers, treasurers, clerks, wardens, ushers, acolytes, musicians, right? We're artists co-creating love. And this is our laboratory, right? This is our classroom, our studio, with Jesus as our teacher. And this should surprise no one given where we are, right? But this is a teacher's college. And from the moment we're born until we draw our final breath, we live into this calling as students, teachers, artists of love. Love is our art, right? And that art we're called to make is a part of a global masterpiece of beauty and love, signed by every one of us.